tuned in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
I'm in trouble.
We will have to think of a song for the opening. And Joseph, let me think about something, a song that came out when I was 30.
Welcome to the Blacklist. Welcome to the Bates Motel.
Am I on the right show?
This is live. You know this is live,
this is
right?
Live. I can't think of that. Went to the Bates Motel AfterBuzz after show.
That's like the third time you've done this, by the way. I haven't said anything, but before you're like, welcome to the Blacklist, but it still starts with a B.
Yeah.
So
Bates Motel.
Braswell Bates Blacklist.
Welcome to the Bates Motel after show. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Dua Casey. Hi, Dua.
Hi. Welcome, everybody.
I'm also
nice to
joined
be here.
By Nando Velasquez.
Thank you for not adding an adverb or adjective there.
I know.
The vain Nando Velasquez.
And on the phone, we are joined by the incomparable Freddie Highmore. Freddie, is that you?
That's messed up, man.
Oh, it's just Joseph LeBeau.
I got really excited. I thought you
I
were
thought
like
it was Freddie.
Apologies to all you iTunes subscribers.
Apologies to Freddie. Joseph Flippo, how are you doing?
That's awful.
Now I'm a complete disappointment. That's how I'm doing.
Flippo, right. You should have gone with it and just like try to fake the English accent and just seen how long we could
Hello,
go.
Mother.
I would love to hear that.
Flippo is Freddie Highmore for the whole interview.
Would have been cheap and sad.
What was that?
It was his bad impression.
That was his attempt.
Stick to Connery, buddy. That's all I got to say. She's just making a mean face.
I think Joe just hung up. Is what happened.
Phone, yes. Thank you for joining us for episode 4. We were one episode away from Romero's episode,
mm-hmm.
but a lot happened here in this one. This was a good episode. I want to get our first impressions, but I will start out the podcast by saying I was wrong about Annika. I thought she might have survived. That she might have be alive.
She's
dead. They're going to drag her out for a couple more episodes, but she is definitively
they dragged her out dead. This episode. They dragged her out, put her in a gurney, and said goodbye.
She is super dead.
Definitely dead. Definitely dead.
Oh, wow. And, Lounge Blogger actually mentioned something last week that she thinks Norman killed the floating girl who does have a name, by the way, whose name is
Lindsay.
Obviously Lindsay.
Lindsay. Yeah.
And,
which means that I was wrong. My drop the mic prediction was wrong.
Right. So let's do a little housekeeping here.
Half wrong, because it was her BMW.
Exactly. So you're half wrong. People loved your predictions on iTunes and YouTube and otherwise, but of course it was wrong because we do have her name is Lindsay and we didn't know that. We knew that, but we didn't realize that when we were doing our podcast last week. And, Lounge Blogger mentioned that in Psycho, Norman always throws the bodies in the marsh where he put the car in the marsh.
Yeah.
And so that's the marsh.
That's the marsh.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe,
the little Easter egg. Yeah, thanks for that, Lounge Blogger.
That was good. That's a good one.
In the meantime, we had some stuff happening here. Before we get into that, Flippo, you're on the phone doing whatever you're doing. What did you think of this episode?
I loved it. But I always say that about the show because I love the show.
Right. Hey, what do you think about Vera Farmiga? I'm not sure.
No, I think she's okay at acting.
Yeah. I never quite get how you feel about Vera.
She has the Joe Sanfilippo stamp of acting.
Right.
Approved.
I never knew. I've said this before. I never knew I was a talent whore. I had no idea, but it turns out I am.
Sure.
Among other whores.
That's a good episode.
Yes. Good stuff. Good stuff this episode, yeah?
And we talked about all this jealousy last week, and all the I think I mentioned it, and you gave me a scornful look.
Sure.
And you said what when I said all the bordering on incest and how and the incestuous bizarre way he responds jealously to Norma, and I think it came out a little more this episode. So there's that.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
You're
in fact,
1,000% right.
I thought about you a lot when I was watching this episode, Sanfilippo, because it was, you know, when in doubt, you know, how many people, you know, kiss their girlfriends to make their moms jealous?
Yeah,
that was a little wacky.
And ask questions like, do you still like me?
Sure.
That's like an insecure relationship question.
How many people kiss their girlfriends to have their make their moms jealous and have it work?
Yeah.
Oh. That's even worse.
Yeah, that's worse.
That's nice.
I don't know what's worse there. What did you think of this one, Dina?
This was a good episode. This is an episode that I like to call kind of like a foundation episode. We've had so much happen the past three episodes that this really, you could tell, was laying the groundwork for things to come. So even though there wasn't as much excitement in this episode, you can tell that they're laying the foundation for everything that they're going to be unfolding later.
Right. That makes sense.
It was important.
Nando?
Yeah, I love this episode. That scene in particular with Norman using Emma. And that was crazy. But, you know, there were some moments we were watching it together. I just could not stop laughing.
Yeah.
And not in a this is ridiculous kind of way. It was like awesome to see Norman, see Freddie Hartmart, you know, play this jealous rage against his brother.
We talked about last week the baseball tub is a lot with the sort of the unintentional intentional comedy thing they do.
Yeah.
It's really great.
But I just couldn't help but laugh out loud at these scenes and how well they're played.
Did I miss a scene? Did I miss something? Because is it just me or did Dylan just appear? Like when did he start living at the house again? Was that this episode?
Oh, he never left.
But he was staying in the woods with the boys.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of working on the farmhouse. He's kind of back and forth.
Well, when Norman said, you know, ever since Dylan's been back, and I was like, when was Dylan back?
That's a good point. I think officially he came back after the whole pot business went kaput. He came back. And his only business up in the woods now is sort of, you know, tidying things up, building the farmhouse.
We just haven't seen him there yet.
I figure we just haven't seen him that much, but I get the feeling that he'll spend a couple of nights up there with Gunnar and Caleb, you know, because he's fixing a house and then come back down. Yeah, and Chick. And then he'll just come back down. And especially since Norma is having all these issues and now that Romero's not there, you know, it probably is more reason for him to check up on her. But, you know, Norman was really reacting, I think, at first to when they brought him back to bed. And Caleb was saying he was going to watch over Norman and Norman saw Norma like touch him on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was like the first big reaction and caused that whole speech about, you know, you don't like me anymore, you know.
Which is really, I mean, God, this is really, really sad. I mean, this is, to me, we talked about this last week as well, but just watching Norman sort of descend into this sort of sadness, sort of psychological break is just really heartbreaking. I mean, I find it heartbreaking and fascinating, but, you know, it's hard to see, it's hard to watch, and especially at the opening scenes where we see him, you know, sort of, you know, really after we saw his bathtub sequence last episode, him coming up and realize he blacked out and realizing that Annika's dead, and he's like, did I do it? And Norman's like, shut up, Norman. Shut up. Get out of here. Shut up, Norman. That was like eerie and sad. I don't know. Flip?
You know, it's kind of a crazy moment, right, where I think that I don't know about you guys, but I had kind of the tension had kind of dropped out of that for me in between this week and last week. And it took Norma's line, like reminding us, like, no, he just tried to kill himself, you know, a few hours ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically what he tried to do. Some part of his consciousness tried to kill himself.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think that it kind of dropped out for me. So, that was like a forcible reminder. This is all happening in real time. You know, it was a week's gone by for us, but for the kids at Bates Motel, it's only been a couple hours overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Right. How do you guys think Romero is? I mean, I still can't wrap my head around Romero because he's looking at this whole thing like, what the hell? The look on his face when Norman's having his episode and everything he went through last season with Miss Watson and the murder investigation and all the stuff and in, you know, his proximity to the family. He knows something's up. He keeps saying, as he said in this episode, chaos seems to swirl around you, Norman, this family.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what the hell? What do you think he thinks at this point, Dua?
Well, it had me thinking. When they were having the scene with Norma and Romero in the kitchen, I was reminded that what does, like, Romero has no idea about Norman's blackouts, does he?
No.
And I, for some reason, I thought that he knew, and I was reminded that he doesn't. So there really is, he very much is kept in the dark about this. And I think that there is, now that he has lived at the Bates Motel and now that Norma has, you know, done his laundry at one point, like, there is a different dynamic behind it. I do feel like he is kind of there to protect, but it is kind of strange. He needs to get to the bottom of things. And, you know, as they said earlier, now that they know each other a little bit better, they know when they're lying to each other. So it's difficult. So I think that that's going to unfold a lot of stuff. You know, that scene, why are you lying to me?
Yeah.
You know, why are you lying to me?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's becoming, you know, more difficult for Norma to keep things from him and hide things from him.
Yeah.
And so, and I was just shocked that why didn't she just tell him about the USB?
Oh, my God.
Because she thinks there's pictures of Norman doing something terrible on them.
Is that what you think?
You think that?
That's what I think. Well, wouldn't that be her secret fear no matter what?
No, but I think she just thinks that there's something, like she told Dylan, there's something here that can save us. Something can save us.
Annika said, use it. Do something with it. It's important. And then Norma also said that when she was sharing the information with Dylan. They've said it in that sequence three times.
Well, she said, use it for you and your son.
Yeah, use it for you and your son.
So that makes sense not to give it to Romero.
Yeah, it's important. It almost says, I thought that there was some type of blackmail so they can use it as leverage to blackmail somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I expect.
Lounge Blogger thinks there's information on the bypass on the USB.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It would make sense that, especially Norma doesn't have a lot of faith in many of the people in the town. The way they treated her in previous seasons, you know, we've seen her excursions out into the town.
The weirdos in the town, as she puts them.
Running into people. Yeah, all that stuff. And she trusts Romero a little bit, but still, you know, there's the whole bypass and everything. So, yeah, of course she wants to find out what this information is and how to use it before she gives it away to anybody.
Yeah. It's still just driving me absolutely crazy. I just want her to give it to Romero because Romero is an ally. Romero is not a what.
Yeah.
Or so we think. We won't find out until episode 7. But, we think that he's an ally, and it's just like she needs help, and Lord knows she's not going to figure this thing out on her own. Mm-hmm. But she's plugging it in. She's trying, you know, Annika, sex crazed, which, you know.
That was hilarious.
Again, the comedy skill.
I'm going to change my password.
None of this stuff is working. So just, you know, Norma fumbling through, who knows nothing about computers and can barely plug the USB in, is trying to figure this thing out. I love how she goes to the coffee shop and sees a little hacker kid. Like, you know, you look like you know what you're doing on that thing.
Yeah.
You mean this laptop?
You're typing quickly.
That thing?
Yeah.
You know, like, and, you know, it doesn't work. And I don't know. She's still, I wish she would just give it to Romero already. And we'll see how that plays out.
I love that kid's expression when he's like, your mother put this together? And he's like, no.
He's like, my mother's taxes are in here. There you go. He's like, I don't think that's true. That's the whole thing is just driving me crazy. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I want to get back to the interaction with Norman. After him realizing, okay, maybe he did or did not kill Annika. And now he's just really having this sort of very sad moment. Like, do you care about me anymore? But since Dylan came back, I don't know if you like me the same. And he's gone beyond sort of him being jealous, you know, of anyone else. But he is, well, I'm sorry, he is definitely jealous of Dylan at this point, right? He's really starting to feel Dylan, the closeness of Dylan and Norma.
Jealous of their connection, that they're sharing things that he doesn't know.
Right. And so his reaction to that is to get her back. And so this whole tool, it makes you wonder about his motivations for being with him in the first place, because, you know, when they're studying and she comes in and they start making out, he does the movie, opens one eye and kisses more, and opens one eye and kisses more. And it seems to work. I don't know. That was kind of weird. I don't know.
Well, she had asked, before Norma walked in, Emma had asked to go on a picnic, and he had already said that, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So I think that he was planning on doing that beforehand, and, you know,
think he was going to kiss her beforehand, but then when he saw his mom come in?
I think that he was planning on going on the picnic beforehand. What I found really interesting was that the conversation between Norma and Norman about the fact that he can't sleep with Emma got into his head.
Yeah, and that's down the road. We can get to that now, but because I want to talk about the making of the sandwiches and that whole thing too, that whole exchange there, which is
the Dijon mustard.
Yeah, which is the same thing. But like, I just want to know, like, when did Norman make this shift? I mean, maybe I missed this, but when did Norman make the shift from like, you know, I don't know, mom, did I kill her, and I don't know what's going on, to like, I'm gonna get Norma. I'm gonna really get in, you know, get under her skin. I'm gonna make out. I'm gonna make her jealous. I'm gonna make these sandwiches for the picnic. Mm-hmm. You know, where's the Dijon mustard? He's like, he's doing the lettuce all nice. Like, I've never seen anyone blade lettuce on a sandwich with such care. Took him like 45 seconds to put one piece of lettuce on a bread. Joe, go ahead.
Well, that was an extraordinarily feminine scene. I mean, the way he was. I mean, you the camera pans in, and he's wearing. He's wearing her apron.
Yeah.
And his shirt is buttoned up. It almost looks like a blouse. Hmm. And and the way he's the way he's playing that, the way he's kind of dealing with mom was very, it felt very feminine to me.
Yes.
It felt very, very like a feminine superior portrayal. Like, I don't know why you're jealous. It's perfectly fine. Please, where's the Dijon mint? I mean, you get his toe in that water.
That's a great point, Joe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very much like, you know, you can see maybe him slipping into that Mother Norma character.
Well, we saw that a little bit last week with the Romero interview.
Yeah.
When Romero came over to
but
talk
to him. He was very masculine there, though. Like, he was, his leg crossed. Yeah,
he did kind of like, this is, but you remember he even had that line in this episode, this is my house, where he kind of says that too. So he's kind of like just taking, you know. His territory.
That's very interesting because it's Norma's house and it's very much been Norma's house and Norma's a kid, but now he's very much saying, this is my house. This is my house too. And we would think that it makes sense because he's 18 now and he's a man now, but really, if you look at it another way, he's sort of becoming, he's Norma. Like he's slipping into that Mother Norma role and there's not enough room for two Normas in the house, which is, you know, weird. Anyway, so, So the whole sandwich thing was interesting. And then Norma, it's working on Norma. She's slamming the mustard around. And then she kind of reverts back to old manipulating Norma, which we haven't seen in a while, actually.
Yeah.
Because she's been so much in protective mother hen mode. We haven't seen the manipulating Norma of, like, coming back like, oh, yeah? Well, you can't have sex with her, you know. You know, like, yeah, I'll kick
totally
your butt to the
projects
moon.
It onto Emma. Like, like she's trying to protect Emma, but that's not what it is at all.
Exactly.
This has nothing to do with the motivation to protect Emma.
And it was an interesting scene the way it played out. I didn't think it was working until Norman goes, don't you think I know that? Or whatever. And I was like, I forget how we worded it. It was something like, you don't need to tell me that.
Yep. That's why.
You know, and I was like, oh. That's a bummer. It worked, you know.
Yeah.
And you know.
And what kind of line does a girl want to hear when my mother said I can't have sex?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no better line for anyone, any woman, other than my mother says I shouldn't have sex with you.
Well, what I find really interesting about that in like a normal teenage rebellious mode, like I think that would motivate a child or to have sex with her to be like, I'm going to show you, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to find a beautiful abandoned cabin in the woods and go and have this amazingly romantic moment. I've never stumbled upon a cabin in the woods like that.
I mean,
that.
It couldn't have been more perfect. It was like, well, too cold out here to have sex.
Yeah,
I guess we're going to go home. What, was that a cabin?
Yeah.
Is that a fireplace?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're going to have to sit here and go home now because my mom said no.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I believe it looks like the cabin from Lost, did it not?
Yeah.
Jacob's cabin.
Joe, what did you think of that whole sequence?
Well, first off, whether or not I was interested in having sex at that age had nothing to do with my mother or my father.
That's for damn sure.
Good to know that.
Yes.
I just was. but yeah, that was pretty remarkable. And I've been to the woods several times, never had that laid out in front of me. But but her line was terrific. I didn't know your mom was coming on this date with us.
Yes.
But it really does give the lie to it. I mean, I don't think he's interested in Emma in a sexual way.
No.
Did you guys get the feeling that he was?
No, not even with that kiss.
Yeah, you've never got the feeling that he's interested in Emma in a sexual way, in whatsoever. I think that all of Norman's sort of sexual, anytime Norman has that sort of his sexual arousal has to do with some sort of forbidden fruit or some older. It's always some sort of like, I shouldn't be doing this, but there's a huge conflict, which may come into play with Emma, because now that Norma has set this up, like, you can't do this, maybe that does come into play as making Emma some sort of forbidden fruit, but I don't know, but it's usually that's the thing, like, he's doing something he's not supposed to do.
It seems to me he responds violently to women, to overtly sexual women. I think there's a part of him, like, I don't want to hurt you. I think that was kind of had a couple of layers of meaning.
Right.
You know, if she becomes overtly sexual, then then there's a part of Norman that is going to think she's dirty, and then
Visor is bad.
Leads to blackout and some badness.
Which is what we know Norma. I mean, well, at least we know Norma from Psycho to view about women, like how, you know, if they're, you know, a harlot or whatever.
I like the idea of that cannot hurt you having a double meaning, though. I think that's an astute observation.
Sure.
Can we not pass by my favorite line in the episode? Two people who wouldn't know their ass from a handbag if they had a head cold.
I wrote it down too. I didn't know what the hell that meant. I thought it was an awesome sort of like comeback or an awesome phrase.
It was go Emma.
And I was like, what? Yeah, I wrote that too. You wouldn't know their ass from a handbag if they had a head cold. I'm like, huh? is that what you say around your household, Flippo?
That's the old taxidermist line. It goes way back.
Okay. I don't know that one.
Like, if your dad's in the taxidermy, by God, you know that line.
Right. Because if you had the head cold, then you might be able to recognize your ass from a handbag, which are very similar. Because I don't know.
But the head cold. That. I don't know.
that was
the wrong part of the body.
It's a great line.
Okay.
So that all happened. So, no. Jumping back to Romero's investigation, when you get into Romero's kind of hot on the case here, and he's really trying to figure this thing out. Mm-hmm. He interrogates, you know, Norma a little bit and kind of just questions her, and seems not quite satisfied, but enough to not like run her in or do anything, you know, or run Norman in or question Norman or any of that stuff.
Well, I think Romero knows that Norma's hiding something.
Uh huh.
Because they can't lie to each other that much anymore.
Oh, and he called her out on it. You know, he's like, why are you lying to me? You know, he knows it.
That's so fascinating. But everything other than that small little USB thing that she's saying is the truth.
Yeah, it is true. Well, then I like that he went to go and question Kevin Ram. What's the character's name?
Bob.
Somebody. Help me out. We do the Bates Motel podcast.
Lounge blogger, where are you at?
Bob Harris.
Bob Harris. Yes. He went to go question Bob Harris. Jesus.
It's like a Three Stooges routine for a second.
Yes.
Hey,
and we're getting like, it's funny because every time he goes back to the Arcanum Club or every time he goes back to visit Bob Harris, we get a little more peek of the doors cracked a little more into who this guy is, what the Arcanum Club is, what his relationship to Romero is, what their past is. We got a little bit last week and definitely a little more this week with some more exposition. He basically sort of said like, hey man, this isn't my club. I'm just the elected president, you know? And it's like, oh, okay. Well, there's that of a long tradition that our founding fathers started. So this is like an old sort of thing that's quite interesting. And also he sort of alluded that Romero was part of the whole situation. Like he was in the loop. Maybe Romero was a former president. Who knows? You know, but Romero's out and he's like, you've been out of the loop a long time, pal. But Romero's going right at him. Like, look, dude, you two people from your party, you know, two girls are dead. And he's like, they're not girls, they're prostitutes. Like, come on, Romero, you know how this goes.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, there's a lot of like, don't question me, Romero. I know who you are. Mm-hmm. Like, don't give me any crap. So it gives me at least some insight into what Bob Harris thinks of Romero as a lawman. Cause he definitely has no respect for Romero. Like, he knows Romero. It's almost like, I knew you before you were a sheriff. I know the old Romero.
Yeah.
This new guy with the badge is like driving me crazy. Like, there's something going on back there.
Almost like the drug doing, horse screwing Romero. Like, it seems like they're setting it up for him to have like a really seedy past.
There's, you know, like he's not. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, it seems to me like Romero's not one of these guys. He babysits these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not got the money. You know, these guys have the real money. Romero's, he works for them, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and Romero effed up. Let's be honest. The DEA coming in and burning all that crop and getting a foothold in the town and having the town come on the radar like that. The way that Bob and I would imagine everybody else that's in a position of power is going to view this is a Romero F up. Yeah. I mean, this is Romero screwed up. Straight up. Your job is to keep the DEA out and keep the shit in the horse and so everything runs smoothly and so we all make money. You screwed up. That's why we brought in this other guy. That's why we're running him against you. So let's be real here, my man. So I killed some girls. Big deal. You can't prove anything and I'm going to get you out of that office the next 6 months anyway.
Right. It makes sense. I mean, you know.
By the way, have you seen a USB port anywhere?
No, exactly.
Right.
So even she says something to the effect of, have you, did the girl have anything on her? And, mm-hmm. and he's like, dude, yeah. you're incriminating. Like, that's, you know what's going on. So, so Romero's back to, he goes, ends up back to Bates Motel looking for the whatever it is. He has that confrontation with Norma, and Norma sort of recalls him out and sort of says, you know, who's lying to who, you know, and he's like, it's error. It's my job to not tell the whole truth. You know, I'm not lying. I'm just not telling the whole truth, which is funny because Romero always has this sort of like, you know, he's come from this position of confidence and authority. Mm-hmm. And something about Norma shook him.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm supposed to tell half-truths. Shut up, Norma.
You know, yeah. it's that, like, they know each other better now. There's yeah. like, their rapport is different. So the veil is kind of down. And I love her response to that. She's like, gold star, Sheriff.
Yeah, she won that confrontation.
Yeah.
Like, she stared down Romero, won the conversation, and walked away with mm-hmm. a USB in her bra. You know, so.
By the way, it's where ladies keep anything important.
Yeah, first mm-hmm. place you gotta look.
Yep.
Nando.
Thank you.
Just that's hot tip.
Got my bank card in here right
see?
Now.
See? Look at that.
oh, the lessons I learned on this show.
There you are. Just let you know. Yes. Those of you on YouTube, Dua actually pulled out a bank card from her bra, which is very cool. All right. So,
Can I mention one more thing about the Arcanum Club?
Sure.
Yeah. As long as we get off the other subject. Yeah.
Sure.
I was like, right? how do I get away
from the boobs?
Yes, get away from the boobs.
So one of the lines I really liked, and I think it kind of like informed on the town a lot, is when Bob says, he basically says the Arcanum Club goes back to our founding fathers. I don't know about the rest of y'all, but didn't you kind of get like a creepy, this town is so much creepier than it was just a second ago?
Yeah.
I mean,
history.
Yeah.
The town gets creepier. The funny thing is, you know, the Bates family, Norman moved into that town, and then you thought that they made the town creepy, but it turns out the town was pretty creepy before they got there.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. yeah. and continues to get creepier. So,
yeah. And I love like the town is its own character.
Yeah. Yeah, we mentioned that. Like, it's great to see that. So, one thing we forgot to mention in that confrontation with Norman and Norma in the kitchen is Norman really digging into Norma with the whole like, what's wrong? She's a beautiful, young, intelligent woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like
really? Young,
yeah, young, intelligent, beautiful. What's wrong with that?
This little side jab.
That's what set her over the edge. Yeah. That's what's like, you can't have sex with her. Yeah. Anyway, that does. I forgot what that is.
That'll make me jealous.
So Romero then is continues to be hot on the case, and he goes and tracks down another lady of the evening, mm-hmm. or friend.
Lady of the night.
Lady of the night.
Courtesan.
I like that you coined that phrase, Nando. You know? Nando used it a couple episodes ago, and now it's been the thing, Lady of the Night.
She, you know, and he finds, you know, goes and finds her, has a conversation with her, and talks about Lindsay, trying to get to the bottom of what, you know, maybe Lindsay and Bob's relationship. Bob, right?
Yeah, Bob Harris.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bob and Bob's relationship. We find out, I'm sorry.
I'm going to tattoo that on you.
I know, I'm like, you know. But so we come to find out that Bob, Lindsay requested her to have a threesome with Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't do it because it was her sister's birthday. Darn it, she missed out. But I mean, she, it wasn't like, ew, it was like, that was my sister's birthday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but Annika took her place. So, you know, this really is making Bob look really bad because the two people who we know he had a threesome with are now both dead.
Mm-hmm.
So Romero's definitely got, you know, the goods on him now. I mean, this is like, I don't know how more guilty the guy has to look, Joe. What do you think?
I don't know. I just keep thinking Ted Chau's out of control. I know that's wrong of me, but that's what I keep thinking.
Well, yes.
The character from Mad Men, yes. Bob Harris.
Yeah, Bob Harris.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're
Kevin Rand. He's got four names.
They're going to take company away from you. It's very, very clear at this point that you know, anybody else, any other town, any other guy, he'd have already been brought in.
Sure.
But it's obviously, you know, a testament to how much control he has and how powerful he is that Romero can't even consider arresting him yet.
Well, and also, like, he's like the woman he was questioning said, like, he, you know, when he says, do you think she knew something she wasn't supposed to, knew too much? And he's like, she's like, he doesn't care who knows what about his sex life. Like, he's very open about the fact that he's mm-hmm. doing whatever he's doing, having, lady of the evening parties, having threesomes, you know.
$20,000 threesome.
He probably walked on a threesome like, I killed it! And then, like, that would have been, never mind.
That's a good one.
All right,
well, it does really make it clear, though, that
Joe, do you get it? I killed it, Joe.
I got it. All right. I follow you. You got your
Wawa. Annika and Lindsay. All right.
But it makes it clear, though, whatever's on that flash drive is not about sex. It's about money. It's about drugs. It's about something else.
It's certainly that's the last thing that's because he doesn't care about that.
Bob Harris doesn't care about sex. Yeah,
he's flashing
out
over town. Yeah, he'll tell everybody. So I feel like Romero's got enough to go back to Bob with a huge confrontation. All he doesn't have is this mysterious thing that seems to be missing. So, mm-hmm. So now let's jump back to the final, the third storyline here, which is the Dylan Caleb storyline. Mm-hmm. We see Caleb go into town with Gunner, and he shouldn't be in town, but he's like, you know, Gunner needs help or whatever. And he sees Norma, and the look on his face was a very, you know, very good. You know, my man Kenny Johnson is doing a great job, man.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Officer Lim from The Shield.
If you were an actor and you saw a scene and you knew that you were a brother and it was this incestuous situation, but yet he really, especially in that monologue, I felt for him.
Yeah, he got really sad.
He was in love with his sister.
I wrote that down. I'm like, wow, nice job, Kenny Johnson, is what I wrote. Yeah, like that was really like, oh yeah. Yeah.
Like he was in love with his sister.
And tortured by the fact that he did what he did, and it's this weird thing. Again, go ahead, Joe.
Well, here's what I think this whole thing is one of the really interesting things, being the lines that are being drawn. It's Norma's boundaries historically, they're out of whack, and I think it's really interesting to kind of see all three of these guys, really screwed up by what are essentially, I think, you know, to some degree, missing boundaries. I mean, obviously Caleb is still physically in love with her and in love with her emotionally and as a brother, and obviously Norman is in love with her physically and as a man and as a son. And Dylan needs to please her as a son, and when she puts her hand on the back of his head in that scene in the bedroom, in Norman's bedroom, and Norman responds to that, it was the intimacy of that, not the touching, but mom didn't touch him on the shoulder, she touched him on the back of the head. It was a very intimate and familiar touch, but not necessarily something that we come to expect from Norma and Dylan. It's obviously something we only expect to see with Norman, and we know it's kind of creepy.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, it's interesting to see how all of these guys, as young men, are moved by Norman's boundaries issues, just lack of boundaries.
Well, mm-hmm. I'll take it one step further. We've actually, I think with this whole Caleb thing, we're actually seeing the bit of an origin story for Norma's, Maybe her relationship with Norman. I mean,
mm-hmm,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, the relationship with Norman is obviously, as we've all said, very incestuous and borderline. I mean, they're not having sex, but gather, it seems they're doing everything, but they're in a hard spoon every morning. And that's not mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. So, it's a hard spoon? I don't know. I mean,
that's wrong.
It's not a hard spoon. I mean, a hard spoon. All right.
Better than a soft spoon.
I don't.
Better than a hard fork.
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know about a hard spoon, but versus a soft spoon.
Or a soft fork.
Flippo, are you there? Help me out here.
I really want to help you. Okay. I really do.
I don't know where we got on hard spoons and soft spoons. Anyway, but
one way or another, they got a soul for that.
All right. But more importantly, this is we have these origins as to why Norma sort of where this relationship's come from. And she was in love with her brother, and that was her brother, caused, we assume, by whatever trauma that her crazy mother was mm-hmm. inflicting on her, and her crazy father and mm-hmm. mother were inflicting on Caleb and Norma. They only had each other. They fell in love with each other, and until Norma, in being Norma and her duality of Norma, like got her like sort of a morality streak and like, this is wrong, and then, you know, found some of that dude and got out of there. Mm-hmm. And then Caleb, well, we'll go to that second, but this is sort of like why and how that, you know, she is the way she is. And we got probably the most honest Norma we've ever seen in the scene back when our friendly neighborhood teacher came and saw her in the library. And she kind of confessed to him. She kind of, you know, she really told him some things. She's like,
our friendly neighborhood teacher.
Yeah, like he pops up like, hey.
He's growing on me. Does anybody else think he's cute?
Yeah, he's handsome.
He's cute, right? With like the beard and the scruff. And right.
Harder soft spoon for you for that guy, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. No, but like he.
I don't even know what that means.
Me neither. You coined it. I guess I started it. All right. But there was really, you know, her that was really telling. Like she said, A, I was really close to my son, probably too close, which is an admission that you never would think you'd hear Norma say, that she admits.
She's self-aware.
Yeah, self-aware. I'm probably too close to him. And then she's also saying that, like, I don't trust him anymore, and that makes me feel lonely.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, really, really some real insight into Norma and for Norma to have that level of self-awareness, right?
Yeah. And so to take... Norma had her first therapy session.
Yeah. And she really...
I think she had a breakthrough. That takes months.
It felt like a breakthrough. Like, there's just those two things, like, you know, those two statements are very, very much of a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. So you take that, and then we know now the origin story of where this all comes from. And then, but even still, you see that she's afraid of Norman. She's kind of maybe gravitating towards the psychiatrist guy. Caleb's, you know, she hates Caleb, but now there's Dylan. Dylan's a new person, and she's like, yeah, like you said, Joe, she's touching him back of the head. It's how she does. And what's eerie, like you said, Joe, is all these men are responding to it. Like, she's got this is her brother and her friggin' two sons,
mm-hmm.
and they're all in love with her.
Yep. Yeah.
That's weird.
That is weird.
Okay. Anyway, I just
somebody should make a show about this.
It's, you know. Anyway, so yeah, so that's all happened. So we get this wonderful confession, which is the money confession we've been asking. Like, did Caleb do it? Didn't he? Did he do it? What happened? And he in a shocker, he did.
Yeah,
he did rape her.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he finally confessed.
He confessed to raping her, but it was like a rape with a caveat, if there's a such thing, which there is not.
Mm-hmm.
But his thing is that they had a consensual relationship to a certain amount of time. She said, you know, no. But then he was in love with her and they did it one last time, and he hates himself for it. And all he wants to do is to apologize. Do you believe him? Do
I? Yes, I believed him 100%. Now, I believed him 100%. Yeah.
Me too.
I did. I thought it was touching. And I think that, more importantly than me believing him, I think that Dylan believed him.
Yeah.
And I think that Dylan bought it, which, now that Dylan and Norma's relationship is becoming closer, what is this going to do? Like, he's in a touchy spot.
Sure.
You know, and we'll probably get into it a little bit later, but jump to the end of the episode.
Uh-huh.
Norman now knows that Caleb is in town. So, you know, this Norman can use as ammunition to drive a wedge between Dylan and Norma.
Yeah.
Now, will he do it?
Of course he'll do it. I don't know. Joe, did you believe him?
Did I believe Norman?
Did you believe Caleb's explanation?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's been really honest.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been very earnest in what he's trying to accomplish.
I mean, he appears, hold on. He appears earnest and honest. We don't know.
Yeah.
Because for all
of... You know
what?
That's a very good point.
No, because every two steps he takes towards earnesty, there's like one other shoe drops.
Oh, by the way, I have a warrant.
I'm wanted by the law.
By the way, I'm wanted by the law.
Oh, yeah, by the way.
I'm not lying. I'm just not revealing certain information.
Actually, I did rape your mother, but come on. It's me. It's Caleb. It's your boy. You know? So, you know, I don't know.
You're right.
It's weird. Nando, do you believe him?
You know, I mean, hearing that speech, it was very believable, but seeing him in town when he spotted Norma, that was still kind of creepy.
Yeah.
You know?
It was kind of creepy, but the way that he looked at her, it wasn't like this maniacal.
Anger.
No, but you could tell, like, you could tell that automatically his, you know, his heart started racing, and
it's wrong.
It's all wrong.
This is
a testament to this show. The show is friggin' great. Like, God, Carrie Aaron and Carl Hughes.
Your brother starts looking at you like that. You're like, what
the
hell
thing
is going on?
But again, like, we are sympathetic towards Norman, who we know is a psychopathic killer who has at best an inappropriate relationship with his mother. Mm-hmm. We are sympathetic towards Norma. We're sympathetic towards
Caleb,
who raped his sister.
Yeah.
But we're like, the poor guy's just trying to work it out with his son.
Yeah.
You know, and he wants to just say, can he say something? Sorry. Why is he so bad?
Yeah, that's a testament
to
the acting, definitely.
It's a testament to, like, you know, the guy, the acting, and also what they're doing here in the show. It's incredible.
The nicest guy in the show is Norman.
Yeah. You know, and Norman and Caleb. Caleb's a sweetheart. Besides the whole rape thing. Besides the whole raping his sister thing, he's a sweetheart. And poor Dylan, old doe-eyed Dylan, is sitting there, sweet as hell, like, looking at his dad. / Dunkel, who
Dunkel
raped his mom, and is like, but Dad, come on in here.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just how love-starved he is as well.
This is some effed up shit, Flippo.
No question. No question. You appreciate your own family, doesn't it?
I mean, come on.
I mean, we're screwed up, but we're not, like, bait screwed up.
I mean, but again,
there's dysfunction, and then there is this show,
right?
Yeah,
yes. And there was a bit of a meta. We'll get to the end of the show. We'll get to the climax. We want to talk about the intrusion into the base motel. We'll talk about the climax.
Oh, the two henchmen.
Yeah, the two henchmen are the two guys. Well, one guy didn't look like a henchman. He looked kind of like a boss. I don't know if he was a henchman, but
oh, I thought they were like the errand boys.
They might be the errand boy, but the one guy like felt pretty confident about himself. Like, we're not going to shoot. Do what you want. We'll be back. Or maybe they're just high level henchmen. Anyway, but I just want to mention that the whole fall was, I mean, I think all that whole sequence where Caleb was on top of the roof and he fell and he cut his hand open, that was very meta. It's very metaphor. It felt very metaphorically, well, meta and also a metaphor for the open wound that was left in this whole relationship and the whole idea that Caleb and Dylan are sitting there and he's closing the wound as he's telling the story.
That's deep.
I didn't write it. I just observed it.
No, but that is deep.
That's deep.
Every now and then I get one, guys.
Holy crap.
Deep moments by Braswell.
Dr. Braswell, seeing the symbolism.
He's closing the wound. What do you say? Thank you. Thank you, folks.
All right.
Thank you. I get
it's a little faster than a slow count.
Anyway, so that happened.
That makes up for the hard fork.
Yes.
Hard spoon. Hard spoon.
Hashtag hard fork. I don't know what the hell a hard fork is.
Oh dear.
But all right. Anyway, so before we get to all that, so you know, we still have that matter of this mysterious USB drive, which you know, Dylan gets back to the place, and there's two mysterious guys lurking around. There's a very Tarantino-esque, gun. I got you. You got me. Two guns are drawn. You know, Dylan doesn't back down at all. Threatens the guys. He runs up to Norma and is like, "Do we gotta get rid of this thing?" And Norma's like, "Ah, it's probably just a pimp." Like, come on, Norma. Like, your son's like, there were two guys with guns downstairs looking for this thing. Like, we're not giving it to Romero. It's probably a pimp or something. I don't know. Like, just do this for me. And this is just, they feel like they get a testament to Norma's sort of manipulation powers.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that happened, which is just, again, driving me crazy. That Norma, and she wanted to give a thing to Romero.
Yeah.
So, I want to know what's on it. It's driving me crazy.
Well, we will know. I'm sure we will know.
And again, weird stuff, because the lawyer calls from her mother's estate, "Hey, there's some money. It's for you. Do you want it?" "No, yeah. I don't want it.
Not interested.
But I will risk everyone's life for a USB that I don't know what's on it on the hopes that I'll make money from it."
Yep. Yeah. Or something.
Does she think that she's going to make money from it?
I don't know. She said maybe it'll save us.
Blackmail. Save.
Maybe it'll save us all. You know, maybe she's referring to the bypass.
I think she's referring to the bypass. You know, she thinks it's a town. I think she knows it's a town.
I don't understand how, like, Annika had nothing to do with the bypass. Wasn't aware that Norma was even...
Well, the bypass is Lounge Blogger's theory. I mean, I love Lounge Blogger. I love you, Lounge Blogger. But let's not get too much credence to that theory. It's just she threw it out there.
Mm-hmm. So, nice.
Can I just mention one thing that I think is important? Because I mentioned something about it last episode. The very, very beginning of the episode, Norma is talking to Norman when he comes downstairs to see Annika's body, and he's like, did I do it? As she's calming him down, she says something important. She goes, "Step outside of your body." Mm-hmm. And she goes, "Calm down, step outside of your body, go upstairs." And so that, again, is just a small little thing. With last episode, it was Norman talking about Norma being like, "I feel so outside of her."
Yeah.
So do these small little,
there's like one or two every episode. There's also one we didn't talk about in the cabin where, I mean, there's one kind of double meaning where Emma says, you know, "I didn't know your mother was coming with us."
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. I was like, Mother Norman's in the building. Yeah. Like, you don't know, but Mother Norman's always going to be with you.
Yeah.
Wherever you're at, Mother Norman's going to be there.
Yeah.
So, that there's a lot of that. And also that final confrontation with Norman, Norman sort of, breaking through and like, "What are you guys talking about? What are you talking about?" And you can kind of see him sort of like, again, you sort of see him breaking a little bit, him getting jealous, him getting mad, and then being fine, closing the door, and then sneaking up behind Dylan, which got me to jump, when he's there, "Where are you going, Dylan?" I'm like, "Ah!"
And then he follows him.
He follows him.
He goes on a caper.
By the way, he goes in a caper, but by the way, Norman has crossed the threshold for me, Joe Braswell, from being sweet Norman to being, I am stone cold afraid of this guy.
Yeah.
Props to Freddie Highmore. I am stone cold afraid. When he's behind Dylan, I was like, oh my God. When he showed up at the farmhouse with those eyes, I'm like, dude, Norman's a stone cold killer. I'm afraid of this guy.
Yeah.
Flippo, are you still with, are you afraid of Norman
yet? You know, I do want to mention this. And I think I'm going to follow you down the rabbit hole there as sure. far as symbolism goes.
Yep.
Norma's car, to me, is so symbolic.
Yes.
And so he's driving Norma's car mm-hmm. to Dylan's farm, right? And that last scene where Dylan throws him on the ground and Dylan's there on his knees after Norman says, I'm going to go tell Mom, essentially, right? So Dylan's there with Caleb behind him and Norman turns on the car and the headlights from Norma's car, it looks like Norma looking at the both of them. You know what I mean? Like, does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's, almost like foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Like, and Mama's going to see you guys.
And they also did, I mean, I like how they keep showing the front and the damage on that car.
And it's
they
showed still this. Jacked up.
Yeah, it's still funny. Dented. And it's still funny.
So when she was pulling in, and she saw Romero at the hotel, there's that bumper just all.
Right. Which is also sort of symbolic of Norma, who's always just sort of damaged. who's just damaged and walks around town and drives around town damaged. So that was a crazy scene. You know, Caleb tried to help and, you know, he's harboring a rage. We see Norman get mad. We see him get sort of petulant. He runs away. Then he gets sort of cold. There's a lot going on in that scene with Norma. And then poor Dylan. There's a lot going on in that scene with Dylan because Dylan just sort of realized that, like, all I ever wanted was a good relationship with my mother. And this is he had one weird moment where poor Dylan had finally came to a really great place with Norma and felt really close to Norma. He just hugged his father. He just finally came to a really good place with accepting his
mended
father.
Mended the wound, if you will.
Mended the wound and feels really good. And then like, it's a fleeting moment where it's like, oh, I'm cool with my mom. I'm cool with my dad. I'm cool with my brother. Oh no, no! And then it's that moment where he's like, "Don't tell her, please. It'll destroy everything we build." And Norman says, "You should have thought about that before you betrayed mother." Mm-hmm. Peace. That's Bates Motel.
Great show.
It's a good show.
It's so good.
Dua, you had a couple of quick things you want to do last week.
Well, yeah, and depending on how much time we have.
We got about 5 minutes.
Excellent. So I will go on. If you go on, you can go onto my Twitter page at Dua Casey, and I've actually posted this. Yahoo TV did something that I thought was a little bit fun. It was called Ask the Fans. TV fans are not the only one with burning questions. In our series, Yahoo TV is flipping the script and finding out what questions the showrunners have always wanted to ask their viewers. So this is Carlton Cuse, the executive producer of Bates Motel, has asked the fans some questions. So I thought it would be fun if us, who I think are probably some of the biggest fans of Bates Motel, and then you at home also, and all the listeners can chime in if you'd like as well. Question one. Carrie Aaron and I have said that the season is going to end after season 5. That's going to be 5 seasons, 50 episodes. Now, does that make you more likely to watch, knowing that there is an actual defined endpoint, or less likely?
More likely to watch. I mean, not less likely. Of course, more likely. We already know. We said 1,000 times. We already know how this thing ends. It ends with, 1960 Alfred Hitchcock Psycho. So correct. We know how it ends. So now that I know that it's not one of these, no offense to Lost, like, you know, get to season 4, then be like, I don't know what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then finally wrap it up by season 7. Mm-hmm. 5 seasons, in and out. We know what we're doing. We know where we're going. That makes me feel very comfortable.
Okay. And Nando?
I agree. I agree 100%. I would watch it regardless, but I guess it's more likely knowing there's an endpoint and looking to see how it's going to tie into the movie, because that's where I assume we're going.
Great.
Yeah.
Flip?
Well, you know how I feel about certain actors on this show, so for me, it's really regardless, I'm in. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I love me some Vera, so I'm going to watch Vera for as long as I can.
Great.
Excellent. Question 2, what are the things you like best about the show?
Oh, we know Joe's answer. I think I said it earlier. I like the idea that what they're able to do with the storytelling to really allow us to, really care about these people that we know are effed up in so many different ways. We also know where this thing goes. We know Norma dies. We know Norman's a psycho. We know, you know, Caleb's a rapist. We know all these different things, yet we're still in caring about these people as our main protagonists. I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I love the acting. It's a clinic. Every week watching Vera Farmiga and Freddie Highmore at this. And not to take anything else away from anyone else. It's just a matter of those are the two leads, obviously. But everybody on that, top to bottom, the acting is just fabulous. And, yeah, it's wonderful, slow-played storytelling. I feel that this show more than probably any other cable show, to me, feels like it resembles a BBC type show, a BBC type season.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just love the way the story flows.
Okay,
excellent.
Wait, one more. Well, we got time for one more, Dua.
All right, excellent. Hold on. Ba-da-da. And just a reminder that you guys, all of the fans can go. You can send your replies to askthefans at yahoo.com. And bum-bum, I'm going to go down, I think, to the last question. Hold on. Just one second. Okay, which is the bigger cardinal sin in your mind? Not resolving a mystery by the end of the season or killing a major character?
Not resolving a mystery.
Not resolving a mystery. Down. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, just, not resolving
this. Is, this isn't. The, right. This isn't.
Everybody's the, down for.
This isn't the '80s anymore, where you know when the main character, like when no main characters die. I mean, this is the Golden Age of TV, the post Sopranos. Main characters die all the time.
Yeah,
I need some resolution. You know.
Yeah.
And I think we all do. We're all grown up TV watchers at this point. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
Interesting. Well, the thing is, I sometimes think that not resolving a mystery. I mean, I think between the two, you know, killing a major character and not resolving a mystery, I agree with everybody that, you know, not resolving a mystery. But sometimes when you leave the door open for interpretation, mm-hmm. there's something a little bit fun about that.
I feel that Hollywood usually, when they leave a door open, is because, well, you never know. Maybe we'll bring this cast together again and do a sequel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, based on history. Not with these people in particular, but usually when people try and just create an opening for a sequel, it's usually not as good as the first anyway. So I'd rather have a complete story. Mm-hmm. And if they figure out a way to bring them back, awesome. But we don't need to, leave that door open.
Yeah. Very Sometimes good. It's like the storytellers got a little lazy and they're like, ah, we'll let them figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. That is all I have.
That's fantastic. Awesome. So, you know, I wanted to give some shout outs to our viewers and listeners, but I lost it on my computer and I don't have it in front of me because I'm a jerk.
Why say anything at all?
I'm a jerk face because I didn't want the folks to think that we forgot about them. We mentioned Lounge Blogger and some other folks as well, but we will get to everyone, I'm sure, next week. But in the meantime, let's do some predictions.
And now, your After Buzz TV prediction.
Joe Filippo on the phone. Give me some predictions.
I don't know, man.
Oh,
I think some stuff is going to go down with Emma pretty soon. I got a little nervous for Emma there. I never
like
really
health wise.
Like go down. What do you mean go down?
I mean like Norman going to do something go down.
Oh.
I was never nervous for her with regard to Norman until they were laying in front of the fire there, and some of the things he said, and some of the ways he said it, some of the looks he gave her. It was the first time I'd ever thought, like, oh, crap, Norman could kill Emma. That could be on the table. So that's something I think might go on.
Oh, dear. Hmm. That's a pretty big prediction.
That is. How about you, Dua?
So I am notorious for my predictions being wrong just this season, but I actually think that Norman...
elaborate and interesting.
But I actually think that Norman is not going to tell Norma about Dylan. I think that everybody thinks that
about Caleb.
Everybody thinks that, but I think that he's not going to let that go.
Right.
Like, and he's going to keep that as a secret.
Hmm.
Okay.
I mean, of course she'll eventually find out, but through different means.
Nando.
How weird would it be if Caleb actually somehow knew Bob Harris?
Oh.
Ooh. You know, they didn't even talk about what his warrant was for.
Yeah. That's why. Like, what would be weird if there was some kind of... I'm not saying that... Obviously, he's not from this part of town. He's not part of the town. Mm-hmm. But how interesting would it be if just, you know, being someone...
It kind of seemed like he knew Chip.
It wasn't overlap. But there's an overlap there because, you know, Caleb is Norma's brother. The whole Bates family sort of came into this town, so it'd be a real wacky coincidence of Caleb.
I'm just going on a limb.
They could explain it easily, I think.
Yeah.
That's, you know... I don't think it's... is that your prediction that they know each other?
I guess that's a prediction. I don't know. It just came up. I was just thinking about that.
I'm gonna go with the easy one and just say that I think that Romero will get his hands on the thumb drive next week.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully,
do you think Norma will give it to him?
I think ultimately it's gonna. Well, actually, I take all that back. I forgot my. I think that they're gonna say we should give it to Romero. They're gonna go look for it and it's gonna be gone because Dylan did tell Caleb, oh, I was messing with the thermostat. I think Caleb's going to go check out the thermostat and find it. They're going to go look for it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be gone. Caleb's going to have it. and that's going to be part of the thing. Then
ooh.
I don't know. I
like that prediction.
Yeah, so we'll see. Just really quickly, hello to Solitaire 401, Artist Film, Gimme Shelter, Julie Schurman, sorry, Psycho Bates, Mika. Who thought your production would be cool if it's correct, but of course her name was Lindsay. Dave 1555, good to see you as always. Wickedly Unique, Christina 5456, and Lounge Blogger, as we mentioned a bunch of times. Thanks guys for listening. Joe Flippo, where can we find you?
You can find me on the Twitter at Joe Flippo, JoeFlippo. My website is josephsanflippo.com.
Got it.
Excellent.
Dua Casey.
Yes, you can find me at Dua Casey, DuaKaissi. A lot of the stuff that I find online, I will post on the Twitter page. So, okay. Dua Casey.
And very soon on Instagram for you, right?
And very soon on Instagram. Oh my gosh.
Nando. 3 years from now, Friendster. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nandovel, NANDOVEL, and here at AfterBuzz for a bunch of other shows.
Yes, you can find me here at, AfterBuzz doing a couple other shows.
And outside of Freddie Highmore's window.
Right. Madman and some other stuff. Blacklist, obviously, because I keep saying every week. And on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 4. Let's try to get Nestor in here.
We'll try to get
Nestor back in here next week.
He's directing the episode next week.
Or at least on the phone. We'll figure it out. All right. Oh. We'll see you next week, folks. Thanks.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.